210 in the blue book. Well, again, good morning, peace and grace to all of you. Last week, if you weren't here, we considered birth, the birth of babies. And then we focused in on the birth of a baby named Jesus and the fact that that baby grew up and began to teach mankind how to trust in Jehovah God. And we focused on our third point was focusing on that term, trusting our God. And we read a letter from the Skagit Valley Herald, a fellow put that in there. The title of his letter was Trust in God. But he had a totally different concept of that, if you recall, if you were here. His idea was that the Bible is insufficient for us today. That was basically his main point. So we took a look at that, tying it in with Christ and his revelation to his apostles, the fact that the Bible indeed is sufficient and all we need for today. It's very convenient to say that the Bible is insufficient and not relevant for us today, because then we open the door for doing whatever we want, do as we please. And that it just becomes an excuse to say that, oh, we're guided by the Spirit now in a different way. He's given us new revelation. I'm paraphrasing that letter a little bit. Today, a totally different topic today. Totally different topic. And in your family news, in the intro there, you have a description, a definition of a phrase, keystone species, which I swiped from Wikipedia, so you can read that there. And I'm going to bring up another definition of keystone species from about.com. And if you don't trust internet definitions, I was reading some other references, and this about.com definition doesn't contradict some of the other references. So let's read it together. A keystone species is a species that has a disproportionately large effect on its environment relative to its abundance. Such species are described as playing a critical role in maintaining the structure of an ecological community, affecting many other organisms in an ecosystem, and helping to determine the types and numbers of various other species in the community. Kind of long definition, isn't it? It's just describing a species that, even though it may be small in number, it has a disproportionately large effect on its environment. A keystone species is a species that plays a critical role in maintaining the structure of an ecological community and whose impact on the community is greater than would be expected based on its relative abundance or total biomass. There's the about.com definition. It's a species that plays a critical role in maintaining the structure of a community. Okay? Just throwing some definitions out here, because it's what we're going to base our little talk on this morning. The concept of a keystone species was first introduced by University of Washington professor Robert T. Payne in 1969. Payne studied a community of organisms that inhabited the intertidal zone along Washington's Pacific coast. He found that one species, the carnivorous starfish Pisaster, and I cannot pronounce that other word there, played a key role in maintaining the balance of all other species in the community. In other words, this Pisaster starfish, if it was removed from a community, an intertidal pool, The populations of two mussel species grew in check. Their populations just exploded. And that makes sense, right? If there's no predator to control mussel numbers, then mussels took over and they crowded out other species. Now, if you're a seafood soup lover like me, the more mussels, the better. But if they start crowding out, and this is a fact, in a community, organisms that are of different species help one another. And if one is crowding out all the rest, then they suffer. Even the one that's large in population. So the starfish is a predator that's controlling the numbers, and it becomes a keystone species. The starfish does. Keystones, real quickly, keystone species, because of their proportionately large influence on species diversity and community structure, have become a popular target for conservation efforts. And I'm going to show a little, just a snippet of a one-hour video, just a snippet of it. And that video does have some concepts of conservation efforts. The reasoning is sound. Protect one key species, and in doing so, stabilize an entire community. But the keystone species theory remains a young theory, and the underlying concepts are still being developed. For instance, the term was originally applied to a predator species, like the starfish, Pisaster, but now the term keystone has been extended to include prey species, plants, and even habitat resources. So focus in on prey and habitat resources, and we introduce ourselves to the beaver. Isn't he cute? See, can everybody see the red dot? That's what he's famous for right there. Those are teeth, and his bottom teeth are long and sharp too. Long, sharp, they self-sharpen. They continuously grow and they self-sharpen, and usually they're very yellow because they contain a lot of iron. I-R-O-N, which is hardens the teeth. They do a lot of chewing. I just want to leave that on there all day. I think that's so cute. Now, we're moving from the Friday Creek area, but last year or the year before when I was still working up in Bellingham, drive home along Friday Creek, and I was driving along, and I noticed a real dark stump on the side of the road. Now, I've walked along there taking the dogs. Our dog and the Kramer's dogs came along with us, walking along to the park, and I thought to myself as I'm driving, I don't remember that stump being there, and I pass it, and it's on the passenger side, so I couldn't see it. And I got past, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and the stump moved across the road. It just walked. And I'm looking in my mirror, and I thought, that is a beaver. So I stopped, I turned around, and I went back and drove past him. And he moved back across to the creek side of the road, so now he's on my side, or he or she. And I didn't want to scare, so I didn't stop, but I just slowly moved past it. That flat tail, everything about it, the busy beaver, we call it. I had a real close-up look at it. And amazingly, I've been up and down Friday Creek. I haven't seen dams being built there. That would cause a lot of damage on Friday Creek because there's so many bridges and whatever if all of a sudden big ponds started developing along Friday Creek. But here's the beaver. Here's some of its features. See those big, big webbed hind feet? That helps them to swim up to about 5 miles an hour. And this big flat tail actually guides them. They actually can get up to about 5 miles an hour in the water. And then these front claws for digging. And then, of course, their teeth for chewing. And this is what they're well known for, is building lodges or dams. This actually looks like it's built into the side of a river or a lake, which they will do. But if that's not suitable, that more often than not, they build dams. And the big question is, are they really destructive or are they helpful? Well, yeah, they do take down a lot of trees, but as we'll see, there are some helpful aspects to the beaver. They are artistic. I mean, that's a beautiful pond developed there. They are extraordinary engineers. Here's a beaver dam in the wintertime. Just blends right in. That's a cold scene, isn't it? There's a beaver dam in the woods. Here's some facts. Of course, God designed the beaver, and I don't want us to get sidetracked on that. This isn't a lesson on evidences of the Creator. So I'm going to add something here. But a few facts. It is, of course, a mammal. It's a herbivore. So it eats a herbivore. So it eats the trees, the branches of the trees. It chews off the barks and gets down to the sugary part underneath the bark. And I saw a video of it eating grass, things like that. So it's a herbivore. Its average lifespan is 20 up to 24 years in the wild. There's its size. There's its weight. Did you know, I believe I got this from NationalGeographic.com, so they're asking a question. Beavers are second only to humans in their ability to manipulate and change their environment. Now that right there is our keystone species definition. Their ability to manipulate and change their environment. They're extraordinary engineers. There's a winter scene. Here's the pond that's backed up because of the dam right there. So it's created a meadow back in here. That's a winter scene, I believe. Some more facts. Here's our first point on your family news. God designed the beaver for a particular work, and you know what? The beaver does it. The average, a few facts about it. The average adult beaver brings down approximately 200 trees per year. What's another fact? The sound of running water triggers beavers to build. There was on this video, there was an area, I think it was in Ontario, they were having a tremendous amount of problems because beavers were building their dams close to culverts. The water was backing up and washing the roads out. So they got this guy, I think, who worked with the Department of Transportation, but he had been very familiar with beavers, and he was studying them, and he found out when he put a tape recording of running water in a certain place, beavers started work in that area and building, creating and constructing a dam there, a lodge. So what they did was is they, away from the road, upstream, they put metal stakes, drove them down vertically into the ground, and the water would hit that metal and create that sound of running water. That's what triggered the beavers to start building, and they built there away from the road, and it protected the road, and the beavers were happy because they could start building. Just fascinating that humans use that fact to motivate the beavers to build away from the roads and save the roads from having to reconstruct and fix culverts all the time. Beavers use mud, rocks, and branches to anchor the dam. Now, I hadn't thought about that before. If they didn't anchor it, it just flowed away. We're going to have a picture of mud on the backside of a dam here in a minute. The mud dug out from the bottom of the pond, so they put mud up against it, but they're getting that from the bottom of the pond, and there's actually video of them holding a big blob of mud, and they just pack it in there on the back of the dam. It deepens the pond and creates more water storage when they dig out those holes in the bottom of the pond. Trenches are dug to reach trees farther. Now, keep note of this, because we'll see a picture of this, hopefully. Trenches or ditches are dug to reach trees farther away. So if here's the pond, and they've already taken trees down right on the shoreline of the stream, they go in farther to get trees farther out, and they dig trenches, and of course it fills up with water. They're much faster in the water. They're protected when they're in the water, and they're kind of clumsy on land. So that's one reason they do that, but they make fingers of water away from the main source. And it's easier to move branches to the lodge that way. Water-filled trenches bring water to the dry areas. In other words, a meadow is developing. What do we have next? There's a good picture of a shot of a river stream moving away from the dam and the pond backing it up there. Many of you have probably seen this. There, if you go up to Squires Lake, up north of Alger there, you can see a beaver dam. Or you see the pond. I never have seen the dam exactly. There, see the backside here? A lot of mud. I don't think humans did that. I think a beaver did that. Just piling up the mud there. They're anchoring their dam, their lodge. Is this point number two on your family news? The beaver is a keystone species. Why? Because they teach and influence the community. They teach mainly by teaching their young. They teach their young right away how to start working and building a dam. And within 2 years, after 2 years, the youngins take off and they go and develop their own families. In times of severe drought, water is present where the beaver is located. And on Leave It to Beavers video, they interview a woman who, scientists up in Alberta, who said in 2004 there was a severe drought. And they brought in beavers from, now that area had been trapped 100, 150 years ago and wiped out the beavers. But there were beavers in the Banff area, and they brought beavers from Banff to that area, Buffalo something park, way up there in Alberta, and brought beavers into that area. I believe it was during the drought, and beavers started working away. Ranchers that had beavers on their land saw that water was beginning to collect, and other ranchers were envious of that. They wanted beavers on their land because the beavers were storing water. They're water storage engineers, too. Water's present where they are. Once dried up areas turn into meadows, and we see an example of that on the video, Susie Creek in Nevada. What's another keystone feature? When a meadow develops, then deer, cranes, and ducks move in. We see that at Susie Creek. The lodge is host, the lodge is shelter, and the lodge is protection to other little critters, not especially in the wintertime, not just the beaver. And with our technology, we can put cameras right in those lodges and see the beavers working and raising their young. And then you see these little mice running around inside there. They provide lodging for other animals. The entrance is underwater. And again, that's for protection, but that's the only way to get into it is underwater. And they are family-oriented, obviously. And is there another point here? They teach the young ones how to work and how to build. And it benefits humans. There's a fisherman. You see his boat. He must be over there in the pond fishing because a pond has been created. Now here's where we'll take a look. We'll escape just for a moment and we'll bring up this. I wanted you to see. Okay, now, yeah, Ted, can you hit the lights just for a minute? And I should be able to turn the sound off on this thing, right? Turn it down. Oh, right there? Okay. Yeah, because I didn't plug it into the system like I did months ago, so I'm going to talk myself here. I was right clicking. Should I left click? There we go. Whoa, now we want to pause again. Yep. See the main stream there? Now, is it going to get more of an aerial shot? Let me see here. See the fingers kind of going off of that? Boy, that's a shot from the beaver's vantage point. Here's, there's little critters. That's inside the lodge. Isn't that photography neat? There's beavers working inside the lodge. And you probably might see other little critters that aren't beavers moving around. Here they are working. Isn't that a great shot? Piling up sticks and whatnot. There's the mud. Look at that, almost walking on hind feet, on just two hind feet, just shoving the mud up in there. They aren't slackers, are they? Work, 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 work. Swim, swim. We're at 1703. There's a upon. Now, when we get to that aerial shot, notice the fingers coming off. See the fingers coming off of this here and here, and wide open. There's a dam. There's probably a dam. There's probably several dams along here. And then we're gonna. Then it goes to that scientist talking about Alberta. Look at that. So we're gonna move up to 20 minutes. Now these scientists are walking to an area, they've only seen pictures of it. But 20 years, this is Susie Creek, 20 years before this, the ranching and cattle had drunk up and eaten up everything around there, and the Susie Creek was a desert area. Now they've just come back and they're taking a look. They're shocked at, see the green around along there? Because beavers have been making dams along Susie Creek. Young beavers moved in from another area 20 years ago and made up dams, and water has been stored because of their dams. And now Susie Creek is, along the creek, is green. And deer have come in, and cranes have come in, and ducks and other species. And so these two women are real excited. They're taking measurements of the depth of the water and all of that. And it's just interesting, even from a Christian standpoint, of how God has designed the beaver to do its work, and it's benefiting. Our point is how it benefits other species. There's the deer, there's the cranes. This is an hour-long video, and I'm only showing you about 3 minutes of it. So there they are, moving around in this area where 20 years ago that was nothing but brown desert area. And she's about 5 feet there, because the beavers have dug out the bottom of the pond. There we go. There's a good view of it now. And there's kind of what it looked like 20 years ago. See the difference? So now the cattle are happy. They have more water. It was dry like that. It was dry like that. Just little trickles of water. But now she's saying that the beaver has brought that back to life, that whole area. All right. So we will minimize this, get back to this, back to our main point. Summarizing our 2 points. Yeah, go ahead, Ted, give us some light. God designed the beaver for a particular work. That was our point two. And the beaver, that's our first point, and the beaver does it. Second point is, the beaver is a keystone species. They teach their young, and they influence the community. How about us? Third point. God created us for a purpose. Where in the world do I get that? Ephesians 2, verse 10. We are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works. Now this is faith here, which God prepared beforehand so that we would walk in them. We go to the Old Testament, Proverbs 14:34. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. God gave us work to do, and I'm including that in the concept of faith. When we put our trust in Him, we display that trust, we demonstrate that trust, by doing something. And of course, He's given us plenty of work to do. Just like He gave the beaver work to do, He's given us work to do. Righteousness involves faith. It involves doing what is right. And is that a benefit to a nation? Sure it is, because sin, if sin reigns and if sin is enveloping a nation, it's a disgrace to that people. Psalm 33:12. Blessed is the nation whose God is whom? The Lord, Jehovah God. The people whom He has chosen for His own inheritance. You know what's interesting about this context? Is if you go back to the fifth verse, it says, He loves righteousness and justice. The earth is full of the loving kindness of the Lord. Look at those three things: righteousness, justice, and loving kindness. That's what he loves. He displays those characteristics, but he loves to see that where? Where does he love to see that? In his people, right? In his children. And these are things that you and I can develop as we grow in faith: righteousness, justice, and loving kindness. This is demonstrating, those are attitudes and action, demonstrating our love for God. This should be familiar to many of us. He has told you, old man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Micah 6:8. That's Old Testament. That's not just New Testament concept. That's been around. God has expected his people to behave this way for decades, ever since the beginning of time. Okay, the opposite. Let's look at the opposite just for a second. This is negative. This is not good. This is Isaiah 1:4. Alas, sinful nation, God talking to his people. He's not talking to heathens here in this context. He's not talking to ungodly nations. He's talking to his people. They're weighed down with iniquity. He calls them offspring of evildoers, sons who act corruptly. They have abandoned the Lord. They have despised the Holy One of Israel. They have turned away from him. Now, when God's people do that, what's the effect on the community, so to speak, on the nation? Well, here's the effect. Here's where you come in, Mo. Isaiah 1:7-8, please. Yeah, there's some results, some consequences of this previous slide here, being a sinful nation. Okay, Mo, let's hit 21 through 23. Murderers. Rebels. Thieves. Bribe. All right. See, that's a sad picture, isn't it? That's a negative picture. That is the opposite of what we saw back here. If God's people had been practicing this, doing justice, kindness, and walking humbly with their God, or those other things, loving righteousness, justice, and loving kindness. Think about it, brethren. This isn't rocket science. This is pretty simple, isn't it? When you think about it, when a woman is not coveting another woman's husband, or a man is not coveting another man's wife, or a person is not lying to his employer, or a person is not lying to his neighbor, or a person is not lying to his spouse or to his children, or a woman is not cheating on their taxes, or what else can you throw out there? Or when a business person is not cheating their customers, what effect does that have on a neighborhood and on a community? When those evil things are not being done, what effect does it have on the community? Everybody's happy, aren't they? A community thrives. But when there's stealing going on and lying and hate and bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor, it affects the family, it affects the community, it affects the neighborhood in a negative way, and it affects the nation in a negative way. An ungodly way. Is that a better word? But when the salt has an influence, like when Mo puts salt in his potatoes, he does that for a purpose. If he puts salt on his mashed potatoes and he takes a bite and they are as bland as could be, there's something wrong with the salt. But salt usually has an influence. How about God's people? Does that ring a bell? Does a passage come to mind? There's our Isaiah passages there. How about this one? Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And Jesus, in other passages, talks about us being, his people being the salt of the earth, does he not? Being an influence. Where are we in that? Do we have flavor? Do we have flavor for the Lord? Are we flavorful for the Lord? A keystone species is a species that has a disproportionately large effect on its environment relative to its abundance. Just think of our nation. Is our nation 99% filled with believers? No. Is God's people probably the minority? Yes. What did Jesus say? The way, the gate is narrow. Straight is, narrow is the way. Narrow is the way. Narrow is the gate as opposed to the big gate and the wide way. Which door, which path, which gate does the world go down usually? All the time. The wide, right. Jesus says, enter in by the narrow gate. Is the road difficult? Yeah, it is. But enter in there, because where does it lead? Eternal life. Abundance. We are, God's people are not in abundance in this nation anymore, in my opinion, but we should have an effect, I hope. Such species are described as playing a critical role in maintaining the structure of a community and a neighborhood and a nation, affecting many other human beings in this nation and helping to determine the types and number of various other human beings in the community. Did you know that? You can determine the type and the number of various other people in your community. Now, those of you who weren't here last week, I asked the group last week to, and we did this in Acts class, to think of three people who cross their circle of influence, who are unbelievers, whom they can influence or bring to Christ in some way. Whether it's bringing them to a teacher, like an elder, or bringing them to somebody like me or Carm, who can sit down and teach them if you're not comfortable with that. I'm not going to ask us to do that today. I'll throw that at us. I think it's a great exercise to have a moment of silence, think about three people, and to pray for those people. And I know you do anyway, I hope, at home. Let's continue that. Let's continue to encourage one another to be an influence, not only in our behavior, but to have boldness to speak up when we come across somebody who's wandering in darkness and trying to find a way out. And yes, there are a lot of different churches, denominations in this valley, and I guess you could say we're all competing for a lot of unbelievers, but let's not give up. Let's not give up. Let's work at growing together. I've determined that I will not, in the next few months, that I will not have lessons where I'm constantly saying, we need to do this. You need to do that. Here's a list that you're not doing, and you got to hurry up and do this and do that. I want to take the approach of let's grow together in the grace of God. We have to add that, because as a local congregation works together, we're going to trip over one another's toes. Our personalities are different. We're going to stumble and say things we shouldn't to one another, or do things against another that we shouldn't. There'll be sin, and hopefully that's taken care of the way it needs to be. We're going to make mistakes. We're going to have problems, but by the grace of God, let's grow together. How is that for a goal coming up in this new year? Let's grow together in the grace of God and be a, quote, keystone species. Like the beaver. All right? I believe that's my last slide. The beaver fulfills God's purposes. How about us? Beaver's working on instinct. We have a choice, don't we? Let's choose to serve God and be an influence in our community. And Lane, let's lead us in that song. Blue Book, what was it, 210? All righty. Let's stand and sing, please.